Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Sean Logadoc. I think
very
I got
well
that right.
Said.
Because it's close enough. We practice this over and over again. Logadoc. I think I get it.
Yes.
But it's still, you know, it's like, even if you learn a language and it's not your primary language, even if you do the best you can to pronounce words, whatever country you're in, you still it's never the exact way, right? It's as close as you can. And I do everything phonetically, but it's, so we got him here. Sean's here. So Sean has built 4 tech companies in 8 countries on 3 continents. He's been sitting around doing nothing. So he's been a busy guy. He is creating the synergy needed to succeed, merging everyone together from the top down. That is a task. He accomplished this with keeping it simple, or KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Don't complicate the matter. It's already complicated already. Sean, I want to thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being here, and thank you very much, Phil.
Absolutely. Okay, question. Where was that serendipity, that accident, that coincidence in your life? I'm sure there's many, but what comes to mind? Because you just didn't do all this stuff. You didn't wake up one morning, I think I'm going to do all this. I'm going to create a company and do, you know, create my business Outforce and everything and do this. So what was that thing that kept pushing you? Because maybe you were going in this direction, suddenly going, I better go that way. Like, I got it. I need to go this direction. What was that thing that pushed you that way?
Well, if the question is about what keeps pushing me, it's usually blind determination to get it right. You know, it's like, how do you learn to fly? Well, you jump hard and hope you and head for the ground, but hope you miss.
I'm going to use that as a t-shirt. I like that.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it has been a lot of determination and really being aware of where the market is versus where you thought it was when you started an idea. Usually my companies have started with an idea that I thought was great based on what I saw as an opportunity. And of course, once you get in it, you see the flow of where things actually need to be, and you pivot or you finagle it to meet the market.
I think that's, you know, where people are. I'm learning this with the musical started. Somebody, a producer in Hollywood's interested in the musical now. And it's been an interesting, and it's only been about a month or so. And I don't know what I'm doing. And you have to find, you know, pivot. You have to be able to collaborate. You have to be able to change and alter. You're like a chameleon, you know, because by the time you get it there, it might be that way. Like you said, the economy changes. The economy is always changing, right? So what the needs are change in 30 seconds. So you get there, and then you also, like you said, you have to finagle, you have to pivot. How important is it to you in every day in, because everybody, you know, I'm not a big fan of the word stress because it's just a word, right? And there was somebody that said they don't give you a stressful job, just stressful thoughts. How do you keep focused on the changes on the outside that you can't control to keep it peaceful on the inside? So you're not waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. How do you kind of focus your mind to be able to keep it where it needs to be? Because if you're in worry, if you're in fear, if you're in anxiety, and you're in all those things, you're going to accomplish nothing. You're no good to anybody around. You're no good for your family and your friends. How do you do that for yourself?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I do that in a variety of ways. One is absolutely exercise, just to get stuff through your body. I do meditate, and I am a bit of a stoic. So I've read the holiday books and I like it. I really like that approach that, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, you could die. Okay, then what? Right?
That's it.
So then what? So you think about the worst that can happen, and then you let that feeling that would come from the worst that could happen, even if it's grief, you know, if it's something really serious too, you let that flow through, that is only when you will have accepted the potential outcome in its fullest form.
Wow.
And then you have no fear going into whatever you're going to do. No fear. No, that's not true. There's fear is not a bad thing, right?
No.
It's a good thing. And stress is a good thing too, because it gets you excited to do what you want to do.
Good point.
But you have an approach that, yeah, okay, so that could happen. And you just go. You don't have the anxiety that creates the stresses that produce the resistance to a positive outcome.
Keep the negativity away. That's my thing. There's two things. You talk about meditation. One of my favorite buttons on the phone, listeners have heard this many times, is the airplane mode. Because, I used to be an engineer in the medical field with x-ray tubes, CAT scanners, x-ray machines, all sorts of stuff. That was different. Podcast? There's no emergency podcast. There's no emergency with the musical. There's no emergency with my philosophy and doing my seminars. This is not dire consequences here. And you're absolutely right. What is the worst that could happen? Well, failure. I don't like the word failure either, because when you fail, you learn. Or when you fail, you get to choose to be, oh, God, I blew this kind of money. That whole thing turned out really bad. It was like, and we always look at what we don't have, not what we do have. So steps, just because something happened with the musical doesn't mean it's going to take right off the ground. I'm learning. I'll find out what it is. Will I get there eventually? Absolutely. Will there be ups and downs? Absolutely. But you get to, that resistance. You get to choose to use that as something to resist. When you resist change, you just create so many different toxins in your body, because then you worry about things you can't do anything about. When somebody says, I don't understand, I'm getting older and things are changing. And I said, well, riddle me this, Batman. When was something in life not changing? And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, when you were born, did you know how to walk? No. Did you know how to run? I go through the whole thing. Yeah. It's like everything in life is changing. And then we get to this point where we're like, we were talking earlier before the record button. He's in Canada. I'm in Illinois, and it's cold. And he said, it's always surprised me. Everybody looks like, I can't believe it's snowing. It never snows now. Yeah, it does. It's wintertime. But people resist change. And it's interesting, because but change from the minute you're born to the minute you die. And what is the ultimate thing? What is the ultimate problem? What could worst case, Dale Carnegie talks about this. What was the worst case you could go through? You could die. Okay. And then that's my dad always used to say, he lived to 91 years old. I'm 6 feet above the ground. Everything's good. What is the worst thing? And then if something does happen, I always view it as this. Your body will tell you what your mind is going through. If your stomach is tied up in knots, your mind's doing it. It's not like your mind, your body goes on automatic. Your mind goes on automatic, and it will tell you what's going on. And we're not aware of it. And we say, well, this or that's going on to affect it. Then eliminate that. When you were doing these businesses, a lot of businesses for tech companies. On the tech company side, are you more with the software or the hardware, or are you a mixture of everything?
Mostly, yeah, software. There was one, it wasn't my business. I worked with it and had the go-to-market initiatives around it. So my first company sold, and one of my board of directors asked me to help out with one of his portfolio companies. This one was in material science and quantum physics. But a sales cycle, I just could not handle. It was 2 years of sales cycle, and I just don't have the attention span for that. So so we landed a couple of deals, and then I moved on and went back to software. So yeah, software generally is where I play. It's very mobile. Like no pun intended, but you can if you don't hit it right the first time, you can easily adopt software to make it work. Hardware, different story, right?
Very true.
Put up a retail store, different story.
Yes.
You are stuck. Or not stuck, but you've got a different problem if people don't respond to what you're offering.
And you've also forked a lot of money into something you really just can't chuck and start all over again. With software, you don't have a brick and mortar store. You don't have something that you're paying a mortgage on, or you're paying a rent on, or you have an agreement. You have an agreement to get it done. Now, software, did you originally start in software when you were younger? How did you kind of get into that little turn in your life?
Well, I'm older, so I've had a few companies before software. Yeah.
So it wasn't software at first then?
No. My first real business, tiny business. I had a video cameras were just coming out, and Expo 86 was coming to Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
We decided to start a business renting video cameras.
Okay.
To people for the show. We ended up getting good enough real estate, so we converted it to video recordings of people's household goods for insurance purposes, and we give them the tape. That afforded me enough to go to Europe for ski vacation. That was in my early 20s.
Okay.
So different things. I was in commercial real estate for a bit. I also leaded sponsorship for a bunch of things, including a ski resort operations in the Vancouver Olympic Games.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Raised the dough for the bids, not for the games themselves.
Okay.
So for a variety of other businesses and verticals. Yeah.
Interesting, because I always find it very fascinating to listen to people's different stories. I mean, you know, like I said, we were talking before the record button. It's like, what is this? You know, I'm an engineer in the medical field, how to get a philosophy in a musical. But it's an interesting drive how you get to where you're at. And you really, did you have to kind of go back for learning the different software stuff, or you're not on that level? You're not writing code and stuff, are you? You're just kind of like on that high level of what you want and bringing out the right people. So I wanted to go into your business because I really like the name, Outforce, a global team connector. What do you mean by Outforce?
It's a combination of outsource and workforce.
Oh, okay.
And it's for engineering principally. So yeah, I did do four tech companies, and every time we did something, we would hit an inflection point, either of growth where we had a big customer or investment where we needed to grow faster, or, you know, build an API or a front end for a data migration platform for a big client. Okay. Either way, they were sort of non-core engineering tasks, or we had to get ready for a show and had to get the product ready, right? So all those things contributed to reasons to outsource something to add on some engineering capacity to our own core team, because we need speed. And, you know, when you're doing that, it's the opposite of hiring your own engineers. When you're hiring engineers, it's, you know, it's pretty sparse out there. Good people are always employed. And when you turn your head to outsourcing, it's water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. I mean, there's just no filter for all the stuff hitting your inbox.
Interesting.
And so how do you know what's real and who's not? Nobody has the time
to
investigate all these things, and therefore nobody really has good data. And usually you're sort of doing outsourcing as not your core activity, so you don't really have necessarily even a good process. So that's what I decided to solve with Outforce, is to provide great data on who does what well in a B2B basis, so business to business, not like Upwork, where you can sort of choose an individual as a gig worker, and not like the big, you know, CGIs and Deloitte's, the big, and Infosys, the big consulting firms that are, you know, used by the big, big enterprises.
Right.
In the middle, where most of the business is, nobody has a clue. So, you go, hey, Phil, do you know anybody who's good? And you might know somebody who's good, but they might be in the music technology business.
Right. Right.
Or something else. And I'm in health tech. And so that has no bearing whatsoever. Or even if they're good and they've got some health tech people, they're good, they're booked out.
Right.
So with very few data points, you're left to looking online, and then you're looking, you know, who's best advertising. You end up meeting the best, you meet the head of the organization. They tell you exactly what you want to hear. If you ask an outsourced agency, can you build this? They'll all say yes.
Of course. Yeah. And they're never going to say no. That's great. That's what they do. Right.
Right. So we ask a very different question. We represent North American clients who are looking to outsource some of their work. If we brought you the perfect customer, what business would it be in? Oh, well, we're in marketplaces. Oh, we're in health tech. Oh, we're in fintech. And then drilling down, you know, what aspect of health tech? Is it insurance tech? Is it, you know,
there's a lot of them.
Yeah. What marketplaces? B2B, B2C, you know, all those things. So now you start with that data point, and then what tech stack would it be in? And you get a sense of how deep their bench is. And now you've at least got one, you know, two data points from which you can filter literally. We have 79,000 in our database.
Whoa.
So that's the starting point. Then we really drill down on who's good at not only at the tech stack and the business itself, but what good people do they have ready in the next 2 weeks that my client can use? Because somebody, like I said, somebody who's good might not have good people available when you want them.
Right. And one of the things is there's so many different things I found through the show. And in general, when I used to travel around the world with the X-ray tube business, you know, you just learn so many different things and why things are being done and how they're doing. One of the things I found useless years ago was interviews and reviews. They are the stupidest waste of time. And we still, it's the same thing. I've been on the corporate world for just a few years, not as long as you have, but just a few years now. And I remember it. My wife is still there. She's been doing the same job for 36 years. She's an actuary, but it's still the same stupid reviews. Oh, do your own self-review. And when you interview somebody, I had a friend of mine, he's like, I'm trying to find a job. And they took a test. They didn't even talk to him yet. Took a test because the online stuff, I think, is making it more difficult. Because just because I don't know some of the math formula doesn't mean I can't learn or I want you talk to me, you know, ask me why, you know, hey, Sean, what are you doing here? Why do you, you just need a job because you need a job. I said, let the person tell you what you're doing, but they don't do it that way. And then they go by the same old criteria. I did 1 year. I did my review. I had always good managers. And I worked in the sales and marketing department, for them, but inside it. Now you learn a lot. And I used to stick in one of my managers. I said, and you know what? And I know you're not reading a damn thing. And I would just keep it in the review. He never read it. 1 year, I actually, I swore. I mean, I said like crappers or whatever I said, but it wasn't bad or anything or offensive.
You slipped it in there.
Just slipped it in there.
Prove that he didn't read it.
Nothing. Okay. Yeah. I read all your lines. I agree with everything. You didn't read a damn thing. Nicest guy in the world. Because what happens is everybody, of course, you know, everybody waits to the last minute to do it. When somebody tells me to do it, I always say, I'm doing it now. If I can work it in, if I can, I'll do it tonight. I'll do it over the weekend. I don't want to wait because then you wait to the last minute. Everybody's trying to throw it in and then it gets bottlenecked and something goes wrong. I'm like, well, Phil's already got it done. And it's like, don't tell anybody. one of the things I've discovered with, it's interesting talking about that, working on outsourcing. I was used to working in the corporate world. I'd go, Sean, you know what? Your design guys, he's not doing this thing. Could you get him to say, how's your family? Oh, everything's fine. Go, great. See you later, Sean. You're done. I don't have to deal with them personally. But when you're dealing with individuals on an entrepreneurial or their own business, whatever word you want to use, they bring their, not necessarily I call them dysfunctions, but their way of doing things with them. I'm an engineer by trade. I have a BSWT with an MBA. That doesn't make me better or smarter than anybody else, but I'm used to doing it. A, B, C. In the physics of an X-ray tube, you have to have molybdenum and beryllium and this, da, 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 da. You skip A through Z. You skip J, it doesn't work, you know? And that's the way I approach everything in life. The philosophy, the business, the show, all this stuff, the musical, because you need to get it done. So when I'm working with people, and I'm working with several good people now, but they don't, when they ask me to do something, every time we have one of these calls, like, well, Phil's already got it done. I'm still working on, you know, somebody out. I'm like, I just know my wife always says, you don't want to be the bottleneck. And weeding it through, getting those data points and understanding and asking the question, putting it bad in there, kind of like being a psychologist. Tell them, you know, if Sean goes, you know, Phil, this doesn't work. Well, and I go back, well, Sean, what do you think? You know, you want to get that stuff out of them. So when you're working with the outsourcing, when you're working with people, when you're working with the level of getting where you're at, getting a business started, how do you keep people focused to make sure that you're getting that starting date going? You're getting that project going. How are you involved with just making sure that they're organized enough so when you leave that company or you come back that, you know, how do you facilitate stuff to make sure you're leaving a good mark?
Well, let's be clear. We don't do the engineering. We're like brokering to find them the best engineering company.
Got it.
To do it.
Okay.
However, we do stay heavily involved in making sure everything goes smoothly.
That's the part.
Yeah. So, and you know, you bring up good points like the interview. We have a book that people told us we should sell, but it's too important. I want, no matter whether anyone uses our service or not, you should know how not to screw up on outsourcing because it's got a low percentage rate of success, right?
That's not surprising.
Yeah, mostly because of the process I just described, right?
Right.
You just don't have enough data and you're sort of picking and hoping you're going to get lucky.
Right.
So We have a very peculiar way of interviewing once we start doing deeper dives on the due diligence on the shortlisted companies that helps us extract a couple of things on how they work, what's the culture like in their own firm, both the client side and the other side. And so we try and make sure there's not a big communications and cultural gap in the two, in the companies that are shortlisted, because communications is the most critical part in anything you're doing in outsourcing, right? And so understanding culture gaps is really important to knowing whether the client will be able to work with that. Like, they may be on paper amazing and they may have a great team, but if they don't understand each other, it's not going to work out. So right. That's what we really make sure there's a good match on that side as well.
That's why you're on the show, how we consciously communicate from our minds. You're basically getting in there, being a therapist. You're figuring out as best you can how they're thinking in their minds. And you want them to feel comfortable, because even if you get a great team together, if you're still the bossy pants, and even though you're the CEO, that reflects everybody else. So you have five or six people in there. Got some great people there, but you're not giving them the freedom to share some ideas. I might have the next idea that rocks the medical world, but if I am in fear that you're going to be going like this, so you really do have to understand who you're talking to. You have to understand the CEOs, the board of directors, the engineers, the people, the managers, right, everybody that's in there. Because when you do it, and there's more and more being outsourced, but you're right. It's very willy-nilly. It's when you talk to people. Like I said, my friend took this test, never talked to anybody, said, well, you don't fit this criteria. And I'm like, and it's
how,
like,
would, well, you know?
How would, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, well, his name is Rob. I said, so Rob, I didn't even finish my statement. He goes, it's so frustrating because they don't know me. And then they get me on these stupid calls because it could be an hour away, but they don't want to meet you. They want to do it on, no. See, it's like, I want to meet somebody. That energy that we have, what we're doing right now is fine, but you can't replace being an engineer and formerly an engineer and working with designs and support and going to customers and doing medical and critical redesigns and all this information. The synergy that you have on a call is different, even if it's a phone call, without this. When you're in person, that energy can't be replaced. My wife's company's found it out. Many companies have found it out that we go back to change. You know, something changed. Yep. Everybody's in work at home. You know, oh, it's wonderful. No, I thrive on that interaction with people. I want to say good morning. I want to learn. You can't learn anything if you're sitting at your desk at home. You can't learn how to be with people. You can't learn to sit there going, you know, how are you going to react when somebody makes a comment that you think is completely stupid and, you know, but you don't know how to react? How does your body language? How do you talk? How do you communicate? How do you ask questions? How do you present in front of people? Not on this medium, on front of people, because you're doing it in this medium, you're not being seen. You're seeing the PowerPoint. And then you start talking to the PowerPoint, which is the worst thing in the face of the planet. You know, I have PowerPoints for my philosophy, but I don't talk to it. It's just an example. And then I draw stuff. You've got to be able to have that interaction. And I think that's something that, have you found with what you're doing since and everything pivots back. We're talking about change all the time. Oh, it's going to be this way forever. Yeah, of course, hockey. It'll change again. Have you found that similar experience where people are not going to an office? Some maybe can do it, but don't you think there is a major energy difference, a creation difference, a powerful, like, humanistic thing that's kind of missing that can affect the way the business runs?
No doubt. We are distributed as a company, and we get together quarterly just to rebuild that human connection. And but when you're outsourcing, you know, you could be dealing with companies in various parts of the world, or even just different parts of the United States. You know, we have thousands of companies in our database in the United States alone. But if they're far enough away, it doesn't make economic sense necessarily to bring them into the office. There's nothing better than that, though. That is absolutely the best. Unless, and again, this goes back to the culture of the company.
Right.
You know, you just want mercenaries to go write code who are hyper smart. You don't really care if they're that friendly. I mean, I remember when COVID first came out, I remember there's this comic. It was like, you know, an engineer talking, or somebody talking to one of the engineers, and he said, so how's it going? And, oh, you know, I'm sitting in my basement writing code, you know.
That's it.
He said, yeah, yeah. The other guy says, yeah, yeah, COVID, eh? He goes, COVID? You know, so some engineers just are, you know, introverted, hyper smart,
yes,
not very social, don't want to be, you know, definitely don't want to be out in the public eye,
right,
and don't want to speak about the code. They want their code to speak for itself. So there are different styles, and you really have to determine what you're looking for. If you're a startup and you have an idea and you want somebody else to engineer it, well, you want a really good communicating design architect to help you through that. If you're, you know, doing massive data sets and you're working with large enterprise, you might have some mercenaries in that along with the communicators to the client, right? So that it really varies.
And you're right. You really have to understand. I mean, at one point, the head of engineering said, hey, Phil, you know, you're really good out there. I'm a customer service person. I was the tech support guy. I understood when I first got the job there, my manager at the time said, I want you to go to every department. You're not going to be blowing glass. You're not going to be putting the X-ray tube in the lead housing. You're not going to be, I want you to know every part of it. I want you to, you're not supposed to be an X-ray. I tried it. I was terrible at most of it, but I was more the engineer for the touchy-feely. I had the medical equipment, taking the X-ray tube, putting the engine in and making sure it worked. Well, the engineering manager is a really nice guy. His name was Clarence. And he goes, Phil, come on in. I want to talk to you. Would you ever thinking about, you know, being a full-time designer? I go, well, Clarence, I was never that kind of engineer. But he said, well, I'm going to send you to a CAD class. That's how long ago this happened.
Okay.
I think CAD's around. I don't know. So I went to the CAD class. And of course, I'm a nerd. I'm like, oh, this is cool. So I went back. Goes, how did you like it? I said, I loved it. I said, well, what would be my job? He goes, why don't you talk to the other engineers? You know them anyway. I said, so you go up to the customer. Nope. You're on the phone. No. What do? You go to meetings. And you get one specific part that you're designing, and you have to do it in the program, and da 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 da. And I go, and I don't remember the other question, but I asked all these things that I'm used to touchy feel. I got to be out there,
right?
So I went back to him. I said, Clarence, thank you for the opportunity. This ain't my thing. And he goes, well, dang. I had a feeling it might not be, but I really like the way you think because I'm the way I communicate doesn't make me better than anybody else, but it would add something different in the engineering department. They're more introverted. Maybe, but you were not going to take those design engineers and bring them out to a customer because they wouldn't know what to talk about. That's not bad. You just have to know yourself. So it's interesting you say that. And it's the same, a mercenary. I like that. You know, you want them to hit it and hit it hard. You don't care about their personality. If they could just simply, yes, no, I'll take care of it. End of story. And it is important. And even if they're not code people, if it's just simply people that are working in a factory or people that are doing a particular task, whatever that task is, they don't always need to be, you know, want to go out with a beer with or have our personalities to go out and do that. That everybody's got their place. So it is interesting, but I've also found it much more difficult on the internet to find, like I think I said it before the record button, I'm not sure, the fakey people, because there's a lot of fakies. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to like LinkedIn or any of these, and they're great places to go. I'm not knocking them at all, but it says, I'm a brain surgeon. I'm a garbage man.
Harvard graduate. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if I hear one more person said the number one best-selling book and everybody, and I'm not knocking it. If that's what your thing is, that's fine. But when you go to mine, I said, creator of Agenoi, the philosophy of Agenoi. And then you can go down. I talk about that. I'm very specific, right to the point. And when you talk to people, they're very nice. And I'm not knocking it. But when you talk to them, you find out they have nothing, absolutely nothing. They have an idea, but they never put it in place. They never got past the fear of, you know, do they need to have someone like Sean? Do they need to have investment? Do they need to talk to bankers? Do they need to talk in VCs? Whatever the case is. And because it is scary when you're going down your own road, like I said earlier, that I go up to Sean. Sean's in charge of the engineering department. He takes care of the guy. I don't have to deal with the problem. But when you're dealing with a problem, it's not everybody comes with you, and it takes a long time. So when somebody says, you're going to be successful, it's like, well, success took a number of years. It just didn't, you know, people forget, like Apple, Apple was broke for like 20 years. Remember, they kept going out of business. Apple's going to go out of business tomorrow. Going to go out of business tomorrow. Go out of business. People forget.
It almost did. Scully almost buried it. And there was a guy, and there was a certain someone who understood consumer. You know, he was head of Pepsi. He knew consumer mindsets and how to bring Apple to the masses. But it doesn't translate.
No, I mean, just because
you
I know
too how, many products, yet you know,
you've got to have that mindset. You've got to have also good people around you. You got to have a group of people, I call them my mentor groups, that can actually, you can depend on any time that you want. How do you create that? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And for the stage you're at, I mean, to that point, I've seen companies where, you know, the entrepreneur has a great idea and decides to get a really great bunch of mentors around him or her. And they end up, you know, going for the, you know, big brand, big names, people who've been in large corporations, and what they know just simply doesn't translate to early stage, right? You need people who have been through early stage and the rough and ready, and then trade up to people who can take you to the scale up, and then trade up to the people who can get you to the next level. So you really got to look at who's around you at each stage. It's common thread is, it's very rare that the people who get you from one stage to the next are the one who are going to get you to the end.
That is interesting. And that's interesting because I'm discovering that on my own. But you also have to have people in your corner. But you also have to go through the ones that don't work. I've learned more from the failures than I have to any succeeding. No success.
Oh, we all do. Yeah,
but we don't think about that. We think that failure, it holds you back. But I don't want it to hold me back because there's enough room for everybody. And everybody's got a niche. The more I get into this, there's an IP attorney that I'm working with right now. He's doing IP for like Barney and all these other people. He's been doing it for like 40 years. I'm like, really?
Barney the dinosaur?
Yeah. Barney and all the cards. All these different
IP for Barney the dinosaur?
Oh my God. He's got tons of them. And he's the nicest kind of face the planet. He goes, yeah, I've loved this job. Been doing it for 40 years. And again, I didn't even know it existed. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't even know the IP idiot person. What does that stand for? I didn't know what it meant because that's not my thing. But you know, it takes time. And I believe in the philosophy of Ajinoy, the soul knowledge, knowledge of your soul, universal spirits, universal mind, spirits and angels, coincidence, serendipities, accidents, discovery, awakening, transformation, all these different things in the philosophy. You have to go through different things to be able to get to where you're at. And really, it's interesting. At a stage now that I'm at the beginning, specifically with the musical, I'm not going to go to Steven Spielberg. You know, you need to let the road figure out itself. Let it come to you. Don't force. When I started forcing specifically to musical, trying to find people, I mean, I had this one guy who said, well, you know, I know somebody with $1 million. Then he whittled down going, I think I know a few people that might know somebody with $1 million. Then it just kept getting worse to the point. So a friend of mine, her name is Leanne, my audience has heard this many times, that she goes, look, she's been in business for like 40 years. She goes, if you got $1 million, do you know any directors? No. Know any producers? No. I mean, she kept going down this list. I go, you're in the wrong place. Go to another area. Figure out another way to get there. So I stopped doing it like 6-7 months ago. And then look what happened. So you don't, when you try to force something to work, it doesn't work. It's kind of like when you question something too many times. If you're questioning to buy a car or whatever you're doing in your life, or if it's a business, don't do it. Because unless it's real, you can really picture it in your mind and it works really well, just let it go. Now, I believe business and personal kind of mix together. When you get that synergy, when you find the right people and you get that people together, don't you believe it really affects your personal life? Not that people get into their personal life, but if you're happy at your job, you're happy at this. You're happy in your personal life, you're happy at your job. Don't you think they're kind of one and the same? Because they always keep corporations going, you know, we want the personal time and the business time. We're interested in you making sure you're with your family, but still work 170 hours a week. So what don't you believe that to be true? Because if you're one or the other, it really affects it, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
What you are transpires wherever you go. So a lot of people bury themselves in the work because they got challenges at home, right?
Yeah.
Or they can't do work because of the challenge. They're bad at home because of the challenges at work. They're not dealing with them properly. It goes both ways for sure. And yeah. so it's very important.
It is to confront
what's real and what's really bothering you or whatever that case may be. Yeah.
And if you, my kids, when they were younger, they said, you know, Daddy, I want to have that house with the pool in it. I said, that's great. I'll never see you again. And they didn't understand, you know, they didn't understand and they're not supposed to. But, you know, when somebody tells me I can have it all in my world, I don't define all. It's kind of like when somebody said, I want to make lots of money. I said, well, what's lots of? Give me an mm-hmm. example of what lots of is. And you need to be very specific. For me, you need to pray and meditate. You need to do whatever you do in your life to be clear on getting the right connections to be able to talk to somebody like a Sean and learn by listening. Purpose and meaning, getting up every day. That's very important to this this podcast, consciously communicating with the right purpose and the right meaning. How do you do that every day to keep yourself going? Because I thought when I was younger, like in my 20s or 30s, I'm going to retire. I'm going to sit on my butt and do nothing, watch TV. And I'm like, it never happened. And I have no interest in doing that.
No.
I'm like, I just want to like, the deal's almost done. I'll be done in a minute. You know, so how do you keep that purpose and meaning in your life for you? Tell the audience how you do that. You say you do some meditating and things, but and physically being active, which is extremely important. But how do you kind of run through that to keep yourself really focused?
This is like my fifth rodeo in the tech world. So it's this one. I was part of the fundamental purposes of this was to bring the people along and raise them to understand how to start a business and how to grow a business. And then maybe they go on to start their own. I've had a lot of people who've worked for me start their own businesses and currently very, very successful. So that's it's a lot of give back philosophy in this round. And the other one is the simple purpose of, I just don't want anyone to waste their time talking to companies that are a waste of time. And you can waste so much money and time with the wrong agencies, and it's just not worth it. So that is the purpose. I've been through it. I don't want anyone else to go through it. So those are the two things.
Well said, because it really does make a difference in understanding your purpose and your meaning every day. And there is a lot of, I've spent some money here and there and it just went right in the toilet. I didn't foreclose my home or give my pension up or whatever I'm doing in my life. But when I started this business, I had a lot of people calling me saying, why don't you come work over here? And my wife said, we agreed. I'm going to go after my dream, the thing I wanted to do when I was younger. And we were working from home years before pandemic happened. And she'd look at me and I get all excited because somebody said I could get this job. She says, go away, go downstairs again. I don't want to talk to you. I said, you're not doing it. You need people in your corner to be able to make sure that you're focused on stuff and your purpose and your meaning is really important. And I know I want to do the philosophy. I want to do the podcast. I want to do the musical. And it's all surrounding one thing. Because one thing I'm really clear on pertaining to business and goals is don't go like Ricochet Rabbit. Bing, 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 bing. You're going to make sure your foundation. For me, it's Ajinoy. And then maybe you have a few, I call them tentacles from there. That's it. That's it. Don't, you know, I got this great idea and I do have some other things I want to do, but not right now. Not right now. And just focusing in on that, putting all your energy into pray and meditate. Make sure you sleep well. Make sure you exercise. Make sure you're eating right. Make sure your friends are in the right place. Don't surround yourself with people who are going, it's never going to happen. It's never going to go. It's never going to happen. You're wasting your time. You can't sing. Your philosophy is stupid. You're not going to make, it's like, well, you know, then spend less time with them or get rid of them. If it's family, manage your time. But, you know, go ahead.
I do believe in unpacking that response, though.
Please.
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I had, as I said, I'd raised a bunch of dough for the Vancouver Olympic bid. And as a result, I got to know a lot of chief marketing officers for pretty big companies. And at the time, Expedia had transformed travel from an agency to an online product.
Okay.
E-Trade and Charles Schwab had converted into online. And what was the model there? It was basically the internet gave the end user access to the data that was otherwise controlled by an agent who would get 15% for doing the trades buying the hotel, renting, you know, getting the airline ticket or the hotel.
Sure.
And so I was in advertising, like, wow, okay. Sponsorship is just a fraction of the budget. Television advertising, wow, that's a big thing. And now I could bring the online data, I could bring the data online to the end users. So in the world of media, you know, you have the creative agencies, Ogilvy, Mather, et cetera, and then they consolidate media buying into a couple of big media buying agencies, and they make 15%. So I'm going, so I went around to these CMOs and I said, hey, I got this idea. I want to start this new company. It's a technology company. We're going to basically give you the access to the data instead of paying 15%. You're going to hire a bunch of people at 40, 50 grand to do your media buying, save you millions. And everybody said it was a great idea. Go for it, go for it, go for it. Except one person. I said, and then to your point, this is why you should listen. It's worth unpacking the why. And I said, so what are you talking about? Everyone else thinks it's a good idea. And he said, well, you know what? I mean, I'm the head of a big company in marketing. How do you think I got this job? I said, well, you're really good at it. He says, yeah, but I didn't take a lot of risks. You know, small fraction of the budget would be risky. Ah, but most importantly, what you're talking about is me taking the business away from an agency and putting it in my own in-house. So guess what happens when a campaign fails today? I don't know. I fire the agency. If everyone's working for me, guess who gets fired?
All me. Those people. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, oh, got it. Right. Yes. Yes.
And it's, you know what? Yeah. He was so right. It was like, it'll never fly. You know, I was giving yes lip service, but truth is, it wasn't going to fly. So I ended up pivoting that to basically solving another problem in the media space, which was data migration between two big systems that were used. And the campaign was, we're bringing back the three martini cocktail because you don't have to do all the data entry. And it worked out really well. So it is, when people say no, don't say, I don't want to talk to that person. Say, tell me what you think. Tell me what is it? And don't ask why, because that's a judgmental question. Is it that makes you say that? How would it fail? And they might have insights that are really worth unpacking. Always be open to the negative.
If you just
have a bunch of yes people, you could go completely wrong.
Oh, no, and I stand corrected. You are right. And I'm glad you unpacked that, because it is true. I was being more on a general side going, oh, you're stupid.
Negative people.
Right. I like the way you did that, because you're 100% correct. I don't want people to tell me you're a genius. You're the best man for the job. I don't learn anything. Yeah. There's got to be something I can
do. I look forward to that day.
You're right. You're the best ever, son of a gun. No, I want to be able to learn from that. So that's why what I'm going through with everything with the musical is so good, because the person I'm working with here near my home is going, no, let's do this. No, we'll do this. And this person's good at writing, and I'm not good at this, but I'm good at this. And so, but I want criticism. I want to say, when I do my seminars, my wife usually comes to the seminars, and I go, how'd I do? She goes, well, that one story wasn't pertinent. I understood it because I'm married to you, everybody else. And then it didn't make any sense. Now, and at first when I started hearing it, even though I was open, I could hear my mind going, I don't need to listen to this crap, but I do. Right. Was I talking to this PowerPoint? Was my drawings on the whiteboard comprehensible? I went through like 9 months of torture with one of my best friends. And I get him breakfast almost every day. And he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. It's too philosophical. It means nothing. You're not relating to me. You're not telling me stuff. I went through like 6 to 9 months worth of this stuff. But I got it to the point where now I can tell anybody about it. It's easy. But you really have to, you're 100% correct. Just surrounding yourself with negative people is, you're right. Get rid of them. But if somebody's going, great, great, great. You know what? I think that's not such a great idea. And look what happened to you. You flipped it around. You understand where you needed to go. And if you didn't do that, you wouldn't be talking to me right now with all this stuff. So it really does make a difference. Sean, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show. But before we end, what kind of positive aphorism can you leave my audience with? Something that they can go, I like that. I'm going to use that. Something to keep them going for the day.
It's something that I've been coached on. It's an approach to, I think it aligns with your show. In every conversation, approach it with, the acronym is VUE: vulnerability, impartiality, empathy, and wonder.
Mm.
So, and the wonder is really, it goes back to the last part of our conversation, that childlike curiosity about how does that work? Wow, what happens now? Oh, cool. Then impartiality is almost impossible to have because we all have something going on in our head while we're talking to other people.
True.
Vulnerability and empathy are pretty straightforward to understand, but the wonder part is really cool because it will, if you are an entrepreneur and you're inherently curious, never lose that sense of wonder, even when it's somebody saying something bad about your company, because you'll find things that you can improve.
That's excellent. It goes back to a big thing of the philosophy is imagination. You know, we lost that ability to imagine. We were told when we were younger to stop doing it. And just to keep that wonder, that imagination in there, that leads you excellent to leave with. Sean, I want to thank you again for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it too, Phil. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. Jabber, 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 jabber. Bad side of the mind. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.